May 26, 1998. Talking about Nellie Fox.
Well, we didn't have too many meetings, but Casey Stengel, we're in Comiskey Park and playing against the White Sox, and he called this meeting and we sat down and listened. He said he was tired of seeing us hit into double plays against the White Sox. And he said, I want to tell you, he said, you hit the ball to Fox or Carrasquel, they're going to catch it, they're going to make a double play. So, I don't want any of you guys to hit ground balls to Fox and Carrasquel in these coming up games. He said, I'm tired of looking at it. Hit it to someone else. And that was the end of the meeting.
That's funny. Did anybody hit it to Carrasquel?
I don't know. You know. Everybody just shook their head.
What a waste of time.
Played.
That was Stengel?
The Stengel. That's right.
How did you get along with Stengel, generally? Did you like him?
Fine, yeah. We didn't have a out-of-the-ordinary conversations with each other, you know, other than he was the manager and I was the player. And he was always upset because I couldn't get to spring training.
Yeah.
And always made a lot to do about that, but I couldn't help that. And he had certain guys that he really liked. He loved Billy Martin and, you know, Mantle and Yogi. They were his, I think, his favorites. But I got along with him all right. You know, I just minded my own business. He left me alone, you know. He never told me nice going and he never told me lousy going. You know, either way, he didn't say anything.
Did he ever say anything to you about platooning when you were platooning with Johnson and
later? No, you know, there was never any discussion about that. I mean, the guys that were platooning never did like it because everybody thought they ought to be playing every day. But, you know, in retrospect, I don't think there's any question. You know, Billy Johnson, the third fellow that played third base with me, and then later maybe McDougal. You know, they could hit left-hand pitching better than I could. And I thought I could hit right-hand pitching better than they could.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was never any discussion about it. So, you know, all the left-handers would, if they were sitting on the bench because a left-hander started and then they got right-handers into the game later on, the opposing team, you know, if he wanted you to pinch hit, he just said, go hit. Usually, if I saw that pinch hitter was going to be needed an inning or two later, I'd get my bat, and I'd have it right in my hand sitting on the bench, and I'd keep looking at him, and he every once in a while would look at me, and then he'd walk down the bench and look at everybody else, and then he'd turn back and look at me, and I'd be looking right at him, and finally when it came time to come hit, he'd say, go hit. Because I think he used to think that he could read a base hit in the guy's eyes. And I think some of his choices were made on that basis of how the guy looked at him. And I know that I used to bet Gene Woodling all the time that I would hit ahead of him. And Gene was a heck of a hitter. But I kept looking at Casey and Gene kept looking at the game. So I used to get the hit before he would a lot of times. But, you know, Casey was just a funny guy. He managed just differently than anybody else, but he had very good reasoning behind what he did. It was unconventional many times, but it made a lot of sense when you look back on it.
He really did start the platooning pretty much, didn't he? I mean,
he started platooning only because of the personnel he had.
Right.
I mean, there were a few teams in the major leagues that had five guys sitting on the bench that could play as well as the five guys that were playing.
Right, right.
So that he had lots of options that other teams didn't have. And not only did he have five guys sitting on the bench that could play as well as five guys that were playing, but he had infielders that were very good infielders that could play different positions. You know, Jerry Coleman could play shortstop, third, and second. You know, I came up as a shortstop. Could play short and third, although I didn't play all that much at short, and just a few games at second. But Gil McDougall could play all three spots. Martin could play certainly second, third. He could play short a little bit, but you know, he had great flexibility because he had guys that could play different positions and not hurt you.
I'm going to go back to the beginning. You want? Would you like something to drink?
No,
soft drink or tea or something?
Okay.
Well, talk to me a little bit about getting started in baseball. I read about the fact that your dad worked with you a lot as a kid and wanted you to be a big league ball player. Is that true?
Well, my dad enjoyed baseball, and he was a good player himself. He never played professionally, and of course, as a young kid coming up, he taught me how to play. I started playing before I can remember. I just know that, when I look back, when I started the first grade in school at recess, I could hit the ball better than anybody else of the kids in the class. And we used to play softball at recess during the lunch hour in the schoolyard. And
were you left-handed then?
Steve started me as a left-hand hitter, and I always hit left-handed. And so from that point on, I just played all the time. We didn't have a lot of formal teams in those days, until you got the American Legion age and high school age. So kids played in the park, and they played on lots, and they played in the schoolyards and whatnot, and you didn't have a whole lot to do, so that you played almost every day when the weather was decent. I was born in Seattle, and of course you couldn't play too much in the wintertime because of the rain, and it got a little too chilly. But certainly when I got to high school, and then we moved to San Francisco, I played every day but Monday. Monday we played paddle pens.
Is that right?
That's
in San
right.
Francisco?
Yeah.
Well, tell me, your dad, when did you move? You moved to New Jersey from Seattle,
right?
And then back to San Francisco.
Right. I lived in Seattle till I was in the, about the seventh grade. Then we moved to New Jersey, and I finished the seventh, eighth, ninth grades and half of my sophomore year in high school. Then my family moved from New Jersey to California, and I finished high school in San Francisco.
You went to Galileo?
I went to Galileo High School in San Francisco.
What did your dad do?
Well, he had a variety of jobs. When he was in Seattle, he worked for an insurance company. When he went to New Jersey, first he worked for the state, and then he worked for himself. And then when he went to San Francisco, he worked for a liquor company, and eventually he became the divisional manager for Schenley's Distilleries out in San Francisco.
I read somewhere that there was suggested that one of the reasons he moved to San Francisco was he had a new job, but also your high school coach had told him you weren't going to make the high school baseball team. Is there any truth to that?
There is truth. I was a sophomore, and we went out the first day for practice, and the coach put me on the JV team and told my dad he wasn't going to use me that year. And it just so happened at the time that my dad had this good job opportunity in California, and he was weighing the decision whether to stay in New Jersey, where he was doing quite well on his own, or take the job offer in San Francisco. And he decided that we'd move to San Francisco. Now, I don't know if he went solely because I was on the JVs, but certainly that played into the mix. He knew that I was going to be terribly disappointed if I didn't get a chance to play on the varsity.
And so you went actually before the season started?
The season had just opened in New Jersey. It was in March or early April, and we had only had three, four, or five practices. By the time I got to California and moved and whatnot, their season was over. They were just in the playoffs, and so I didn't get to play at all my sophomore year in high school, but I played American Legion when I got to San Francisco.
And where in New Jersey was it? Was it Maplewood?
Maplewood, New Jersey.
What's that close to?
Well, it's on the outskirts of Newark. Okay. Maplewood is in the middle of the Oranges. It's
okay.
East Orange, South Orange, and Orange and West Orange.
Okay.
Maplewood is in the middle of all the Oranges.
So then you moved to California, and the high school season's over, so you play American Legion ball right. In the summer. Now, is that when the Reds discovered you?
No.
Or was that the following
year? It was the following year. I was a junior in high school, and the high school team used to play a lot of the freshman college teams. That was just prior to the war, and freshmen weren't eligible in the colleges, so they all had freshman teams. And in the Bay Area, of course, they had five colleges. So we had a very, very good high school team, and we were playing the California freshmen. And, you know, I think we beat them something like 12-2 or something like that. And since one of the professors who was on the faculty at University of California was also a Cincinnati scout, and he saw the game, and he asked me if I would be interested in going back to Cincinnati to work out with the team. And I told him I'd love to do that. So that summer, when I was 16, I went back to Cincinnati, and I worked out with him during one entire homestand. And then they also took me to Chicago with them for they had a three-game series in Chicago. And they went on after that to finish their road trip, and I came home. But I was with them for almost 2 weeks.
That was what year was that?
Well, that would have been 1941.
Okay, so the Reds were the world champions then?
Yes, they had won the championship from Detroit and the World Series in 1940.
Right. Who do you remember from that team?
I remember the whole team.
Did they any of them pay any attention to you as a young kid?
I was. They had two bachelors on the team, one Jimmy Gleason, who was an outfielder, and one Bobby Maddock, who was an infielder. And the two of them were really kind to me. They took care of me and saw that I that behaved myself, and I moved into the same hotel that they were staying at, and they were just very good to me, and they became lifetime friends, lifelong friends. And Jimmy Gleason's son eventually ended up on the faculty at the Country Day Private School in Fort Worth. So I used to talk to him, and then when I got with the American League office, I would talk to him on the phone when I got to Kansas City. And Bobby Maddock became a super scout for Cincinnati, and then later with Toronto. And I saw him many, many times after I got into the American League office. And we got along just great. The two of them were just extremely kind to me.
What was your normal routine? I mean, before the game and during the game and when you were with the Reds?
Well, that first year, what I would do is I'd take batting practice with the extra men and then field ground balls, you know, during the pregame warm-ups. And I think they let me take infield with the second infield. And then I would sit in the bullpen with the pitchers. They would in the bullpen catchers. So I would spend the game in the bullpen.
You told me that was an education one time.
It was an education. It brought me out of the teenage years very quickly.
They were pretty salty characters.
Yes, they would. Many times, Hank Gowdy was one of their coaches, and he was kind of like an old maid, and he was very worried about this young teenage boy who was in the bullpen listening to these guys talk. And of course, they knew it bothered Hank, so they just would deliberately tell me all sorts of absurd things that were pretty gross, and it would just to embarrass him and to get him screaming and hollering at them.
Who were some of the guys out there that were?
Well, in the bullpen at that time, the people that would sit out there would be Joe Beggs was their number one reliever, but they had. The catchers would be Hank Gowdy himself and Johnny Riddle, and his brother Elmer was an outstanding pitcher for the Reds at that time. But they would be in the bullpen along with people like Whitey Moore and Clyde Chown and Junior Thompson and people like that would sit out there. And some of them, even occasionally, one or two of the starting pitchers like Whitey Moore and Thompson would always sit in the bullpen rather than on the bench. Bucky Walters and Paul Derringer were the two great pitchers, but they didn't sit in the bullpen.
Did any of the Reds ever try to run you out of the batting cage or or out of infield when you're taking infield?
No, I never had any problem. I worked out with a lot of teams, you know, both minor league and major league, and no one ever did anything of an adverse nature. You know, they let me hit, they would let me field, and they were just extremely kind to me. And I worked out with Cincinnati and Detroit, Brooklyn, the Philadelphia Athletics, and the Yankees, as well as, you know, minor league teams, and they were all very, very nice.
This was while you were in high school and college?
In high school, and mostly I worked out with them in high school. I didn't get a chance to work out with any of the major league teams once I got into college and medical school, because the war was on and travel was restricted. We just couldn't do that, and I was in the service.
So when you went to the Reds, that was like a year after the coaching. And your high school coach in New Jersey said you weren't going to make the varsity. You were working out with the major league team. Is that right?
Yeah, it was approximately a year later. And then I also went back the following year in 1942, and I worked out with all those teams I just mentioned. I worked out with the Cincinnati and Detroit, Brooklyn, the Yankees, and Philadelphia. All of that time.
Would you just make a swing?
I made a swing.
Well, did your dad go with you?
No, I was by myself.
So you were 18?
I was 17.
17?
Yes.
Would you just work out a day or two in the home?
I would be at a homestand. You know, if I was in Detroit, I might work out 3 days. And if I was in New York, I'd work out 3 or 4 days. And if I would, same with Brooklyn, maybe 1 day, Philadelphia 1 day, and Cincinnati 3 days, that type of thing.
But they couldn't sign you right till you graduated from high school?
Well, they could have signed me legally at that time, because I was out of high school. I graduated from high school in June of 1942, but I wanted to go to college.
Okay.
And they knew that, and I had already been admitted to Stanford.
Okay.
So I wasn't interested in turning being a professional baseball player out of high school, because I wanted to go to college.
Your senior year at Galileo High, you guys have a great team?
We had a great high school team. We won the city championship both in my junior and senior years, and I think we lost one game each year to the same team, Mission High School, but we beat them 2 out of 3 to win the championship. It was a tremendous rivalry.
Who were there some notable guys that you played high school
well,
with or against?
We had an outfielder named Dino Rostelli who went up and played with Pittsburgh for a half a season or so. And, of course, Jerry Coleman played at Lowell High School, and Charlie Silvera played at St. Ignatius High School. And the three of us, Coleman, Silvera, and myself, all played on the Yankees together for years.
Right. How did you select Stanford?
Well, when I moved to California, I played a lot of semi-pro baseball, and in those days the semi-pro teams would often play against the college teams, and because the semi-pro baseball teams were really very good teams in San Francisco in those days. Most of them were comprised of ex-professional players who had come back and were then working, and so that they were good teams, and I played both at against University of California and Stanford and Santa Clara and St. Mary's, all four of those schools. I don't think I played against University of San Francisco with a semi-pro team. But I just thought Stanford was a super school, and I just loved the campus and the whole atmosphere. Their team wasn't very good, but I just felt that that's where I wanted to go to college, and that's how I happened to pick it. I just thought it was an excellent school education-wise, as well as having great facilities.
Yeah. It was pretty close to home, too.
Yes, it was 30 miles from San Francisco down to Palo Alto, and it was just ideal.
Yeah. Who was the baseball coach?
The baseball coach was an ex-professional player of many years and had been at Stanford for decades. His name was Harry Walter, W-O-L-T-E-R. He was the coach there, I guess, for 25 years at least.
And you were pre-med from the get-go?
I started at Stanford as a chemical engineer and was in, but after a month of freshman chemistry, I said, no way did I want to be a chemical engineer. And I thought I would like to deal with people more than anything else, and so that I thought medicine would be a good avenue for that, and I transferred and became a pre-med.
You had to survive organic chemistry, though.
We had to take, in those days, we to get into medical school, you had to have, a year of freshman chemistry, and you had to take organic chemistry, quantitative analysis, and you had to take a year of physics, and either a semester or two semesters of zoology.
Well, and you, now you, so you played a freshman team?
When the war came on in December of 41, and so with everybody leaving for the service and right after that, freshmen and became eligible for varsity. As a matter of fact, everybody who was on the campus was eligible, because they had a lot of servicemen who were on the campus in officer training programs, and they were all eligible too, regardless of how many years of previous college experience they had, or even professional. Nobody was ineligible. Everybody could play that was on a college campus. So I played as a freshman at Stanford on the varsity, played on the varsity at UCLA as a sophomore, and played on the varsity at Tulane when I was a freshman in medical school.
So you played, did you play 3 years of college baseball?
There? 3 years of college baseball in three different schools.
Three different schools. Now, it was at Stanford that you met Ty Cobb, wasn't it?
I met Ty Cobb. I didn't actually meet him at Stanford, but when he came back to the World Series in 1947, and I met him there at the World Series, and he told me that he had watched me play at Stanford because he lived at Atherton, and he would come out to the games every once in a while. So that's where I met him first at the World Series in 1947, and then I think I saw him again in 1949 when he came back to the World Series.
But you were a good enough player at Stanford that he remembered you.
Well, he apparently did. He saw a lot of games, and he remembered me from playing there.
So when did you join the Navy Reserve, your freshman year?
No, I joined the active Navy. I enlisted in the Navy because I turned 18. Everybody who turned 18 became eligible for the draft. So I enlisted in the Navy, and they let everybody who enlisted finish their the year at Stanford. Okay. And then we were called to active duty on July 1st of 1943.
Okay. So that was after your freshman year at Stanford?
Yes.
What did that mean, active duty? Because you ended up at UCLA.
Well, then they put us in uniform, but they took all of the, most of the kids that were in college, and they transferred them to their officer training programs, which were in, they had, all three services had contingents on the campuses during World War II, training them to be officers. So being a pre-med, the Navy had a big unit at UCLA. We had maybe 2,500 B-12 sailors and ROTC that were in the Navy at UCLA, taking the proper courses to become ensigns in the Navy. But the pre-meds and the pre-dental students, and I guess the ministerial students, they of course had to take their own courses to get into the graduate schools, and so that we were just a little bit different than everybody else, so that we were given five semesters by the Navy to have all your pre-med requirements completed. And once the five semesters were over, if your grades were good enough, then you got admitted to medical school someplace. If your grades were not good enough, then you went into the fleet.
So you were at UCLA then one whole year?
Three semesters, because we went the year around.
Okay. But you, and then you went out for the baseball team?
Yes.
Was that just, did the coach know you were there?
Well, he knew that in the B-12 unit there were a lot of athletes coming in from the different schools, and of course, he found out quickly that I'd played at Stanford. So what he did is he formed a baseball team at UCLA made up of the kids in the B-12 unit, as well as the Air Force and the other units that were there. And we played in the summertime against the various service teams that were in that area. And they were, you know, all kinds of, they had the San Diego Naval Training Station, Camp Pendleton Marines, the Marchfield Air Force, Del Monte Pre-Flight, the Port Hueneme Seabees. They had everything all around there, and plus Army units that were training out in the Mojave Desert. All of the tank units were training in the Mojave Desert for Africa. And they all had baseball teams, and they would all come in and play. So we played all summer before the college season really opened the following spring. So he was quite familiar with everybody that was in the unit.
So then that following spring you played for UCLA?
Played for UCLA.
You hit over 400, is that right?
I think so. I forget what the actual averages were, but...
Didn't they put you in the Hall of Fame?
I was admitted eventually into the Stanford, UCLA, and the Tulane Hall of Fame. So I'm in all three, which is
you're
nice.
In all three. So you must have hit over 400 all three places.
Yeah, I hit all 3 years. I hit between 450 and 500, somewhere in there.
Did you play shortstop?
I played shortstop for all three schools.
Hit third?
Hit third.
Did UCLA have a very good team?
Yes, because we won the conference. They only had... The Pacific Coast Conference only comprised three schools at that time. It was University of California had Army service units. Stanford didn't have any service units, so they didn't have any intercollegiate athletics at Stanford. But the University of California, Southern California, and UCLA comprised one league. That was the Pacific Coast Conference, and that was just the Southern Division. And then there were lots of schools in Southern California that formed the league, and because they all had units, Caltech, Occidental, Pepperdine, Southern Cal, California, they all had units, so we had another league down there. So we played in two different leagues, and we won the championship in both leagues.
So you were the... So then, after your year at UCLA, you got all your pre-med out of the way, and you started applying to medical schools. Could you apply to whatever medical school you wanted?
We didn't apply to any schools. The Navy took those records, and they sent them off to the different schools.
Okay.
And what you did is that as you completed your pre-med requirements, I think your name must have gone on a list with your scholastic records. And as each medical school would open up a new class, those names would be presented to the different schools. And I got out, I completed my work on July 1st of 1944, and there were one or two schools that opened up, I think, between July 1st and January 1st. But the school I was assigned to was Tulane, and that opened December the 1st of 1944. So. The Navy sent me to Tulane on December the 1st of 1944. Between July 1st and December 1st, I was assigned to the Naval Hospital in San Diego as a corpsman. So I was down there as a corpsman during those 5 months, and then went to Tulane.
Did you play any ball down there?
Yeah, I played. They had, again, the... I hooked up with the North Island Naval Air Station. That was managed by Wally Berger, mm-hmm. who was an ex-big league player. And I was playing semi-pro baseball in Los Angeles before I came down, in addition to playing at UCLA. And then I started playing a little bit around San Diego. And he saw me and asked me if I wanted to play, even though I was stationed not on his base. So I worked nights at the hospital so I could play for him during the day.
Okay.
And I would, whenever they had games, he would call me and I would just meet them, and I played for the North Island Naval Air Station, or whatever they call it out there.
I meant to ask you, who was the UCLA baseball coach?
His name was A.J. Sturzenegger. And he was, again, He was primarily a football coach, but he was one of the few coaches left on campus because of the war. All of the regular coaches were in the service. So he inherited the baseball team just by the fact he was there.
Okay. So then, when you, so you reported to Tulane in January?
December 1st.
December 1st.
1944.
And to start medical school.
Correct.
Did you know, when did you decide you wanted to be a cardiologist? Was that in medical school or?
No, actually, when I did my internal medicine residency in San Francisco,
okay.
After I had completed 2 years of that, it was a 3-year term. After I completed my second year and into my third year, I just realized that I enjoyed at that time doing cardiology more than any of the other aspects of internal medicine. And at that time, of course, they didn't have any invasive work in cardiology.
Right.
By today's standards, we were in the dark ages. There have been many improvements since then. At that time, it was taking care of people with heart attacks and heart failure and rheumatic heart disease, and you had to do a lot of listening with the stethoscope and physical diagnosis, and I enjoyed that. And so that's why I decided I'd like to do cardiology.
So but internal medicine was your focus?
Those 3 years was strictly in internal medicine and all aspects of internal medicine. And then after that, I spent a year in New Orleans doing cardiology.
Tell me, you decided, back to Tulane, you decided to go out for the baseball team? Is that when you, after your, that spring?
I was in my freshman year, and I was in taking gross anatomy and physiology, which are the two big courses during that freshman year. Two of the biggest courses. And I saw in the school paper that they were having tryouts for the team, and so I wasn't sure how much time I'd have to play, but I thought I'd give it a whirl anyway, and I walked out there and told the coach that I'd like to try it out for the team.
Who was the coach?
The coach at that time was a great Tulane athlete who had been an All-American tailback, and his name was Little Monk Simons. And he was a terrific football player, and he also played college baseball. And just a wonderful man and a great Tulane athletic hero.
But he didn't receive you with open arms.
Well, you know, I was, you know, dressed in a pair of jeans and an old sweatshirt and came out and told him that saw in the paper that I'd like to try out for the team. And he asked me if, you know, he couldn't believe I was a student. I told him I was in the medical school. I was in medical school, and I was part of the Navy. I was in the Navy. And he asked me if I was in my first year, and I said yes, that I was taking gross anatomy and physiology. And he said, well, he said, you won't have any time to play, so you waste my time and your time. He said, you know, if you wanted to fool around and today a little bit, well, he asked me what position I played, and I said I was a shortstop. So he said, well, he said, go on out and play short, and they'll hit you some ground balls, and when you get tired, you can go home. I said, okay. And so I fielded about 20 or 25 ground balls, and came out and said, say, he said, do you want to try to hit a few? I said, yeah, I'll hit a few. And of course, I was a pretty good hitter in those days. And so after I hit about 8 or 9 balls, he came up and pretty excited and said, listen, he said, I think we're going to try to work something out so you can play. And that's how I got on the team and played.
You told me that you had afternoon labs and they'd come pick you up?
If we had a game on the road, and again, we were playing lots of service teams that were around there, they would put the team in the bus and they would come over outside they would park it outside the medical school building. And then they'd wait for me to finish class and they'd have my uniform in the bus and I would change in the bus on the way to the road team. And They used to hold up the games when they played at home until I got there. They would start when I got there. They would tell the opposing teams we'll start between 4:30 and 5, and he said, we got to start when the shortstop gets here, and he's in med school. He can't get here sometimes quite on time. So they were very nice to me. They worked out the schedule just fine.
Did they pick you up and drive you to the home games, or was it just...
Oh, no. Games? You know, the baseball field was on the campus. So no, I would, and I lived right adjacent to the campus in a boarding house, and I would change at home, and I'd borrow my roommate's bike, and I would ride to my, from the med school building on the uptown campus at Tulane over to my boarding house, put on my uniform, and then ride to the baseball field.
In your uniform?
Play in my uniform. You know, it was only a block or so it wasn't that far.
Well, you had a pretty good year there, too.
Yeah, we had a good team, but played mostly the service teams, and played against LSU, was the only college that had a team, and they had service units just like Tulane did. Tulane had a big B-12 unit there.
Okay. Well, and then that was 45, spring of 45?
That was in the spring of 1945.
Okay. So what... Then what happened after that in terms of your
Well, I played at Tulane, and then of course I played semi-pro also. And also, they had both an Army and a Navy hospital in New Orleans. And if they had a tough game coming up with some infantry division, like Camp Polk. Camp Polk was a big infantry center, and they had, if they had a big, or they played Keesler Field and from Mississippi, or the Gulfport Naval Station. If those two hospital teams, if they had a team, but if they had a big service game coming up, they'd call me up, and I'd sneak into their lineup too. They would put a uniform on me, and if it was on a weekend where I had some free time.
So did you? And then you went back to two. You kept, I guess, in medical school, you were going year round.
We're going the year round, and then the war ended in, I think, August of 45, and I was discharged from the Navy in January of 46, and after that became eligible to sign a major league contract if I so desired, and eventually that's what I did, and I was about three-fourths of the way through my sophomore year in medical school when I signed.
So you weren't quite half done with medical school?
Not quite.
But you decided, why did you decide to sign at that point?
Well,
because you thought you could see the light at the end of the tunnel.
I wanted to see how well I could play in the professional ranks, and the Yankees and other teams offered me a lot of money in those days. And so I was able finally to work it out with the school where I could go to school in the winter and play baseball in the summer. So I decided to sign and try to do both.
So you went to school in the fall, or
I left Tulane in the spring of that year. I lacked 1/4 of my sophomore year. I had to take exams when I came back, and two of the big subjects in sophomore year were pathology and pharmacology. The third one was bacteriology. I'd completed that, and I had 3 weeks to go in pharmacology and pathology. So when I came back that winter, they gave me those final exams. I took the final exams and completed those last 3 weeks of classwork. And then there were a lot of introductory courses that you had to take as a sophomore to get ready for your clinical years when you're examining and taking care of patients. So I spent that winter doing those introductory courses and taking the exams for pathology and pharmacology. So when that winter was over, I'd finished my sophomore year. And then each year I'd come back in the middle of October. Usually we're in the World Series. And I'd come back in the middle of October and go till somewhere between April 1st and April 15th, and then join the Yankees.
And you didn't have to take exams sometimes after you left the medical school?
Well, that first year, there were two introductory course exams that the professor said they would just send me the exam when the class was going to take it. Tulane operated on the honor code, and I told him I'd be glad to go over to, I'd suggest I'd go over to Columbia the medical school at Columbia, I think it's PNS at Columbia, and at maybe monitor, have the, ask somebody in the dean's office to monitor me if I took, the, and they said, monitor me while I took the exams, and they said, no, you, that, since it's on the honor code, you just take it when you, you want to. So they mailed me the exams, and I took one of them in the, I think it was the pediatrics exam, I took in the clubhouse at the Yankee Stadium one morning before anybody got there. And I took the other one, it was, I think it was in preventive medicine and, or public health, in the Book Cadillac Hotel in Detroit. I could remember well taking those two exams and mailing them in.
And the famous Yogi Berra comment was when you were studying for one of those exams?
When I was studying for the pathology exam, I, during my first season, I had to take that exam when I got back to school. That was a tough course. I took the textbook with me on the road all the time, and I would study that textbook all summer getting ready for that exam. And I was rooming with Yogi, and of course Yogi was a great Superman comics addict at that time. He'd buy a dollar's worth of Superman comics. He could get 10 of them for a dime. They were a dime a piece. And he'd come up with his 10 comic books on Superman, and I'd have my Boyd's pathology book, textbook. So we would sit there and we would read. It would either be in the afternoon before the game or mainly when we came in after a night game. So the famous thing was that we both finished at the same time one night. He with the Superman comic, and I finished with what I was studying in the pathology book. And so he looked at me and asked me how mine came out.
Back to signing with the Yankees. Why did you decide to sign with the Yankees? That was before the draft, so they were all bidding for your services.
And yeah, they just offered the most money.
Yeah. And it was a great team.
It came down to that. I think that they offered. My dad was doing the negotiating, and Dick Wakefield had signed with Detroit for about $50,000 just prior to the war. And when the war ended, my dad was going to shoot for the same amount, so he asked for $52,000, and the Yankees met that offer. I got an offer from the Browns of $30,000, and I think two offers from Cincinnati and the Giants at $25,000. And Detroit said they would top any offer, but they got a little frightened, I think, I said $52,000.
So that. Now, how did they all know you were available? I mean, they'd been scouting you, I guess.
Oh, I just told them that
you were ready.
When the money got up into that level, I told them I would give it a whirl. I'd try.
Okay. And so then you signed before 46, before the 46, or the winter
right,
of 46?
I signed in the spring of 46.
And then you got to go to the Canal Zone, is that right?
No, the team went to the Canal Zone, but I joined them after they had gotten back. Okay. They started spring training that year very early in February because they had so many players.
Right.
They had they must have had 40 or 45 players in camp because everybody came back from the service. And a lot of them hadn't touched a ball in 3 or 4 years. Now, some of them had played on service teams during the whole time, like I think DiMaggio was able to play on some service teams, and Rizzuto and people like that. But there were a number of them that were in combat units and in the tanks and infantry and whatnot, and they didn't get a chance to play. So they had a very long spring training, and they had broken up into two teams where they almost had two different camps to try to get everybody in shape. And they went to the Canal Zone early, so I didn't go to the Canal Zone. Okay. I got there too late for that.
Now, did you feel much pressure? I've read in some of these old books that Larry McPhail were basically saying you were the greatest thing since sliced bread, and that you'd gotten paid that huge bonus. Did that put any extra pressure on you?
Well, there was pressure, but I was too young at the time to worry about it, because I just thought, I just thought I could play, and that I was going to do all right, because I played a lot against professional players, both in college and the semi-pros, and it wasn't as if I hadn't seen any of these people, because a lot of these guys that I'd played against on service teams were now on major league teams, and I'd hit against them, and I knew what they could do, and I just felt that I could handle those kind of pitchers, and so I was just anxious to play, and I didn't worry too much about pressure, really.
Were you disappointed when they sent you to Newark, or not?
No, I felt that, you know, that the Yankees were loaded at the time. They had Billy Johnson, who had been the Rookie of the Year before the war started, or either maybe during the first or the second year of the war when he was still playing before he had to go in the Army. And they had Rizzuto, who was an all-star shortstop. They had Gordon, who was an all-star second baseman. And they had George Sternweis, who had led the league for the Yankees hitting during the war. So they had those guys playing in the infield. And I knew that I wasn't just going to waltz in there and take somebody's job. And so when they sent me to Newark, it wasn't totally unexpected.
And Newark's pretty high. I mean, that's the highest minor league level.
Well, it was AAA. You know, that was their. They had two AAA.
Yeah,
they had a working agreement with Oakland in the Pacific Coast League. And I think Casey Stengel was managing Oakland at that time.
Yeah, that's right.
So they sent me to Newark, and of course that was fine with me. My having lived in Maplewood, I knew all kinds of people and all a lot of kids that I went to school with in junior high school and high school were still around Maplewood. So that was fine. And that was enjoyable for me.
Who was the manager there?
George Selkirk, who played for the Yankees for years and was a terrific player himself.
Yeah.
He was the manager at Newark in 1946.
You guys had a great team, didn't you? Wasn't Yogi on that team?
Yes, we had a good team. We had Vic Rashi and Yogi and I all played on that team, and Allie Clark, all four of us went to the majors and played for a while. We finished with Baltimore. Baltimore was a Cleveland farm team. Montreal had the best team. They were a Dodger farm team. Syracuse was a Cincinnati farm team. So all those teams were loaded. Montreal had the best team. And they won the pennant. And I can't remember who finished second. It must have been maybe Syracuse, because Baltimore and Newark finished in a tie for third.
Okay.
And I think those four teams were in the playoffs, and I can't remember whether it was Syracuse or Rochester that was the fourth team.
Well, did you play in the playoffs before you went up to the Yankees?
Yes. Yeah, we opened up against Montreal, and I think we lost maybe in six games, and then Yogi and Vic Rashi and an outfielder named Frank Coleman and myself all went to the Yankees after that. Season ended. It ended at about the 20th of September, 18th of September. So we finished the last 10 to 14 days with the Yankees.
Now, was it Frank Coleman that never got into a game when he went up to the Yankees with you all?
I had a feeling he got into a game or two.
Okay.
Yes, I think he played some.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he never, I mean, that was his one shot, wasn't
well,
it?
Well, he was older.
Okay.
Frank at that time had to be maybe 30 or 31.
Okay.
So he was older and didn't really get the opportunity. You know, at that time they had DiMaggio, Keller, and Henrik, and they had one or two other, Johnny Lindell.
Yeah.
So, and they had a couple of other guys that were good outfield. So you just, it wasn't the easiest thing in the world to break
to
in.
Break in at all.
Yeah.
But when you went up, you hit .333 in seven games. So you got to play.
I played in every game.
Yeah.
When I went up, and I think Yogi played in every game, and Rick Vicker actually pitched a couple of games.
And you got more hits than Yogi, is that right?
I don't remember. I don't remember what Yogi did or I did, but I know we played all the time. I think Yogi hit a couple, either one or two home runs during that time.
Yeah. Who did you room with at Newark? Did you room with Yogi?
Well, I roomed with Yogi mostly. I started off rooming with a third baseman by the name of Savage, but he was a diabetic. And that was one of the reasons they had me. And then I think he got sick during the year, and then I ended up rooming with Yogi.
Did you call him Yogi way back then?
Yogi was always Yogi.
He was always Yogi. He wasn't ever Larry to the
Well, he used
players.
To sign his autographs Larry, but nobody ever called him Larry. I always called him Lawrence. Even to this day, I call him Lawrence. But to everybody else, he was Yogi. To me, he's always been Lawrence. It seems to fit him.
What does he call you? Does he have
He calls me Robert.
Does he?
Yeah.
That's great. You two have been great friends all these years.
Over 50 years.
Is he your best friend from the Yankee days, would you
say? Well, I don't think there is any such thing as a best friend. Of course, Jerry Coleman and I grew up together.
Yeah.
And Charlie Silvera, we grew up together as kids. So Jerry and I are very close. And I was close to, I felt I was close to three or four of the others, certainly close to Yogi. And I was kept in close contact with Eddie Lopat and Vic Rashi and Allie Reynolds and Charlie Keller, people like that, and Tommy Henrich, always had lots of visits with those people. Hank Bauer and Moose Gowron and Whitey Ford, all those guys have been, and Gil McDougal, especially. We've just been very close down through the years.
What was DiMaggio ever, was he as removed and aloof as you read about with the other ball players?
Well, Joe always has been, a very introverted person and keeps to himself a great deal and keeps his own counsel. And if you're with him, he's always extremely pleasant and cordial and easy to talk to. But he tends to be more of a loner than anything else, and that's the way he likes it, and people always respected that.
Let's jump back now to 47. You go to spring. Well, you're in medical school. So did you go to spring training in 47?
I got to spring training fairly early in 47 because I completed all those exams, and I was able to get over it in due time in 47.
So you were at spring training in 46. And in 47.
Right.
And then, did you expect to make the Yankees that year?
Well, I hope so. I had a great year at Newark and did all reasonably well in September, so I thought I had a good chance and started out platooning with Billy Johnson and started slowly, and then I started to pick up and really started to play well, I thought. And then I broke my, Mel Parnell, pitching for Boston, broke my finger. When I was hitting, and
were you trying to bunt?
No, it was just a ball I couldn't get out of the way of. He threw it inside and hit me on the hand when it was when I was holding the bat. So ball hit the hand when it was on the bat, and it broke my finger, and I was out for a month with the broken finger. And by the time I got back ready to play, the team was winning and playing well, and Billy Johnson was playing like gangbusters. So I never got a chance to play then on any kind of a regular basis. I filled in for guys when they got hurt, and did most of the pinch hitting, and did that for the most of the year.
You played some outfield too, apparently.
Well, only in a few games where games were out of reach and whatnot, and when they needed somebody in the last inning or two, but not on any kind of a regular basis. But I played a few games in both 47 and 48 in the outfield, only in a pinch.
Now, Bucky Harris was the manager in 47?
He was the manager in 47 and 48.
He'd been around the block a few times by then.
Yeah, he'd managed, you know, Washington several times and other teams, yeah, too, and came to the Yankees in 47.
What did you think of him as a manager?
Well, I thought, you know, he was a decent man and managed fine, and, you know, I thought he was okay, and he was a nice guy.
Did he talk to you much as a rookie?
Well, he was a pleasant guy. You know, again, big league managers, I think, in those days, you know, they didn't sit you down and shoot the breeze with you for an hour and a half. You know, if you were a rookie like I was, you tried to mind your own business and keep quiet and keep out of people's way and not bother anybody.
And you had a pretty good World Series in 47.
Well, I did the pinch hitting, and I was in. They put me in four games, and you know, I got a base on balls and three hits. I got two doubles and a single. And one of the doubles should have been a home run because I hit it over the fence. And I was in Ebbets Field, and they had that little wire screen going up the foul pole. And the screen is in fair territory instead of in foul territory. And I hit the screen way up near the top of the pole. And the screen was, for some reason, was in play, even though it was above the fence. So I hit that thing 10 or 15 feet above the fence, and it dropped back down on the field, and I got a double. I almost got thrown out at second base because I thought it was over the fence and for a home run.
But if it hits the screen, was it
at
supposed
that
to be
time,
a home run?
No, at that time the ball was in play. It was a ground rule. It was a ground rule that the ball was in play if it hit that little screen going way up the pole.
I see.
So anyway, I got two doubles and a single, but one of them should have been a home run. That would have been the first home run pinch hit in World Series history.
Oh, is that right?
And four innings later, Yogi hit a home run pinch hitting, and that was the first home run. And that's when I knew there was Yogi luck, that the gods would shine on Yogi forever.
He hit it over the screen.
That's right. He hit it over everything.
Well, so you were 3-for-3 and with three RBIs and appearing in four games as a pinch hitter.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good start to a pretty good World Series career. So in 48, did you have any spring training in 48? You're still in medical school, right?
Still in medical school, and that was really the tough winter for me because I came back to school a month behind the class, and I had to make
the World Series would keep you
right.
Even further.
Well, I got there on about the 14th of October. And I had to talk the school into letting me back in because my class had already had, during the month of September, physical diagnosis, which teaches them how to examine patients, how to take blood pressures, how to examine the chest, for the lung, how to do percussion, and how to look in the eye grounds and in the eyes, and all of the things that you need to do to be able to examine a patient. I didn't have any of that. So I had to hire tutors to give me that course while I tried to catch up with the rest of the class doing the regular work. So I had a tough time until Christmas. I had classes every day from about 8 in the morning till 9 at night. And then I had to do all my work up with patients and do my studying. So I really had to work hard from the time I got there, middle of October till Christmas time when I finally caught the class. So I got the spring training again probably sometime between the 1st of April and the 15th of April.
So right, you got there right at the tail end of spring training.
Tail end, right.
But you were actually with the Yankees then when the season started.
Yes.
In 48.
Yes.
And 48 is the first year you got to play much.
Yes, I think we had guys that got hurt that year a lot, and I think I played two or three different positions.
Yeah.
And
hit an even 300?
Yeah, yes.
So you must have felt much better about your...
Well, again, I still had, you know, really gotten the chance to play at one position for any great length of time, and was a little discouraged over that fact.
Yeah.
And had hoped that, you know, eventually that I'd be able to get some kind of a position where I could play on an everyday basis. And of course, I never did, you know. I was always platooned, and I always was handicapped by getting to spring training late and so forth.
And you guys didn't win the pennant. Cleveland beat you.
That's right. Three teams in the last week were close. It was Boston, Cleveland, and the Yankees were almost in a dead heat. We had to finish in Boston. As I recall, we had a three-game series in Boston, and we didn't play well. Either we lost three or we lost two out of three. And when we lost the two out of three, Boston and Cleveland ended up tying, and we would finish third. But we were only out a game or two.
So, but at least you got back to too late earlier.
You got back a week earlier.
So then that winter, before you went to 49, was that when you finished medical school? Or
no, I finished, I got back that year, and I finished a third of my junior, the last third of my junior year, and
okay.
Took the first third of my senior year.
Okay.
So I was, I think that's the way it went, at the end of the 48 season, yes. I finished, I took one third of my, finished the last third of my junior year, then became a senior, and finished the first third of my senior year. That was in the fall of 48 and the spring of 49.
And so then you were late to spring training.
Late June. Again, yeah, right. Yeah.
And in 49, looks like you played more third base, but a little bit outfield. And again, you were platooned.
Platooned, and every once in a while, Casey would try to figure out how to get another left-hand hitter in the lineup. And there were a few games that he'd stick me in the outfield to try to get an extra left-hand hitter into the lineup. That didn't happen very often. I think it happened one day on Sunday in Cleveland with the sun shining me right in my eyes, and I was playing right field. It was the first time in my life, and I think it might have been one of those days when they had over 75,000 people in there for a doubleheader. And I played, I think, one of the games in right field.
Did you mess up any
footballs? I don't think so. But I don't think I got many chances either.
did you work out in the outfield some?
Well, you know, before the game you worked out. But there was not any crash course of 2 or 3 weeks getting ready for it. He just would announce before the game, he said, "I think I'm going to try to play in the outfield today," and that was your problem from then on.
Not his.
Right.
Well, he did that with Vera, I guess, later in Yogi's career.
Yogi played some games earlier in his career, too, in the outfield, but because Yogi could run and he could throw well. So he was not some clown in the outfield. Yogi did all right. He was an adequate outfielder.
And of course, his bat was nice.
Terrific.
To have his bat.
He was a terrific hitter.
Yeah. The 49 you all won the pennant and in the World Series to see you play the Dodgers.
Right?
And you got in the four games.
First two games were 1-0. Reynolds won 1-0 first game. Tommy Henyuk had a home run in the last of the ninth, and it was 0-0 going into the ninth with Allie and Newcomb pitching. And Tommy Henyuk led off the ninth inning with a home run, and we won 1-0. And the next day, Preacher Rose shut us out 1-0. And I pinched hit against Preacher Rose and struck out. That was in game two.
Did you play in game one?
I didn't play in game one.
Okay.
Billy Johnson played both of those games, and after we scored just one run in two games, when we went to Ebbets Field, Casey changed the lineup, and he put me in at third, and then I played games 3, 4, and 5.
And you were 6 for 12.
6 for 12.
So actually, you were 6 for 11 in those three games.
Right.
And hit 500 and two triples and a double and drove in 5 runs. That
right.
was another great World Series.
It was a good series.
But did they have most valuable players of the series in those years?
They did. They didn't have, now they call it the Babe Ruth Award, but
right.
they didn't in those days. And I think in 49, they gave it to Joe Page.
Okay.
And there were three of us that could have gotten that award. Allie Reynolds pitched terrific. I think he pitched 12 or 13 innings, and he might have allowed one run, but he might not have allowed any runs, but I can't remember. But I know he pitched. He relieved in, I think, in the final game and shut him out and I think he, well, it was a 1-0 game in game one, so he pitched nine. He pitched about 13 innings, I think, and either allowed one run or no runs.
Was that a 5-game series?
Yes, it was a 5-game series. And then, of course, I got a big key hit.
Off Erskine?
No, I got a key hit in game three. We were either tied or behind going into the ninth inning. It was either 1-1 or 2-1. And we got a man on first base, and I got a base hit in the ninth inning to put the man on first and second. And then I think they walked the next guy. We had the bases loaded, and they put in Mize to pinch hit, and he hit a double off the wall and scored all three runs. And we won the game. It was either 4-1 or 4-2. And then in the next game, I hit the triple with the bases loaded that broke the game up.
So that would have been the fourth.
That was game four. And I think we won that game 6-4 or so. And then in game five, it was a kind of a slugfest. And I got a triple in that game. And I think maybe, I can't remember, but I got another hit or so in that game too.
Who was that off of?
I got a triple off. The first triple was off Joe Hatton. Joe Hatton and I played on the same semi-pro team in San Francisco.
Is that right?
And then the second triple was off Carl Erskine. He had come up that year from Fort Worth. He wasn't the Erskine of a couple of years later when he struck out a dozen people or so in the World Series against the Yankees. But he could still pitch.
Yeah.
But that was his first year in the majors and his first World Series.
Yeah. So then, did you finish your senior year then that winter?
That winter I came back and finished my two-thirds of my last senior year, and I was finished.
Okay.
And
so you actually graduated?
I graduated. I came back and graduated with the class in June of 1950. I flew all night after a Cleveland game in the Yankee Stadium. In those days, they didn't have any jets. They had all four-motor planes.
Right, right.
And you couldn't fly to New Orleans nonstop. I think we had to stop in Memphis or Birmingham somewhere and get gas. And I got into New Orleans about 8 in the morning. And I think I graduated at 10 and got back on the airplane and flew back to the Yankees.
To Cleveland.
That's right. Well, I can't. No, we were at home. We were at home in New York. So
okay.
I missed the one game. I got there too late to play that day, I think. No, I guess I might have even made it back in time for the game, but I didn't play that game.
It's just as well if you've been.
We hadn't had any sleep.
Yeah, yeah. So that was I guess that year. You were late to spring training because you were finishing up.
Yeah.
So that was the same.
I would go during Christmas vacation and work in the clinics to try to get off another week or two earlier in the spring.
Okay.
But I still would get there sometime between the. I think on that last year I got there maybe the day before the season opened, or either there were a couple of years I got there the day the season opened. I think.
Now were you playing catch or something down in New Orleans?
Well, I worked out all winter. After my first year, I didn't do anything, and I suffered terribly when I went to spring training. I was in awful shape. So I decided never again would I do that. And when I would come back to school in October, I'd start working out immediately. And I'd get someone to pitch to me, and I'd swing the bat in the fraternity house, and I'd throw hard every day and do running every day. I did something every day so that I stayed in shape. And I never had any worries about my physical condition when I joined the team. It was just my timing that was.
Did you work out with the Tulane team in the spring?
No, because again, I was downtown and it was tough.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to work out on my own time. And I had fortunately, I had a young guy who could pitch to me. And I'd take some batting and I'd hit a lot on the weekends. And
now, where did you actually do that?
At the Tulane baseball field.
Oh, okay.
They had a baseball field. And then there was one spring that I worked out with the New Orleans Pelicans. They were in the Southern Association, and the manager was kind enough to let me to come out there and work out with them also, even though I think at that time they were a Pittsburgh farm team, either Pittsburgh farm team.
Who was the manager, do you remember?
I think it was Fresco Thompson.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in 50, you played, the record says you played just third. and but again, you were platooned. You got into 95 games, and then you played the Whiz Kids in the series, and again, you had a great series. Well, actually, that was your worst series. You only hit 333.
Yeah.
But you swept, but I guess the first three games were real one-run ball games.
Well, I think the fourth one was a one-run game.
It ended up being 5-3, I think.
Yeah, but they scored. That's when Gene Woodling was hit in the chest in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Because he lost the ball on the sun, and they scored a couple runs, and
right.
It began to get a little bit tight.
Yeah.
But it
yeah.
was a close. All games were very close. They were all one or two-run games.
If I remember correctly, you hit a ground ball in game three when the Phillies were ahead in game three, and you hit a ground ball to Hamner that he booted that sort of opened the door for you guys.
It was a tough chance for him because it was in the hole, and it was a half hopper for him, and it was not an easy play. And DiMaggio was running on first, and he was a tremendous base runner, and he got a terrific jump. The bases were loaded, so he didn't have to. The first baseman wasn't holding him on. He could get a good jump, and he got a terrific jump, and he beat the throw to second base. Hamner dropped the ball and then retrieved it quickly and threw to second. But DiMaggio just beat the throw, and that allowed us to tie the score. And then I think we went on to score another run or two.
Yeah, you did,
and won it.
So it sounds like it could have been a hit or an error.
Well, it was really an error, but it was not an easy chance for him. And it took, I hit against Constanti the first game, and our scout report said everybody always hits way, they always swing way ahead on him because he threw so many changes and he had so much off-speed stuff. So. I was impressed by the scouting report, so I decided I would wait, and I was the only guy that was behind all the time on him, and hitting the ball behind, not out in front the way I should have been. And that's what happened in game one. I think I got one hit. I scored the only run in that game. I hit a double between Puddinhead Jones and third. He was playing third base and the base. I hit a ball line. Right down the third base line for a double, and then scored on two fly balls, and that was the only run.
Yeah, that's right.
And then in game three, when I pinched it again, I fouled off about five or six pitches, I think, off into the left field stands, and then finally ended up hitting a ball toward the hole at shortstop. But it was after that game that I realized that I just wasn't hitting my normal way against him. And he came in game four, and I tripled off him because I'd finally figured out how I should try to hit him.
Against Constanti?
Yes. And so it was a game too late in figuring out how to try to hit against him. But he'd had a fantastic year. You know, I think he'd won 20 games, or at least he'd been their reliever and had been a terrific relief pitcher.
He was the MVP.
Yeah, and he pitched an outstanding game in game one. You know, he just was outstanding. And, of course, he started the series in place of Robin Roberts. And Robin pitched game two, and, of course, Curt Simmons was in the Army. So we got a terrific break without having to hit against Simmons. It would have been a much tougher series if Simmons had been able to pitch.
Did you ever hit against Simmons in spring training?
No.
Never did.
No.
The old Phillies, including Roberts, said that he hit a lot more stuff than any of them. I mean, he threw so hard.
He got one of the big bonuses. Yeah. He was one of the big bonus babies.
Yeah, 15 of the 16 teams made him offers.
He was outstanding, and I can't remember if he pitched against Billy Pierce or not in that all-star kid game they used to have in the Polar Grounds.
The American Legion game, he did.
Well, he
pitched again in one of those games.
Yeah, but they were just...
were you in that game?
No, I never played in that game. That game started after I was after the war. After I had signed a professional contract. But he was an outstanding young pitcher with Simmons, as was Billy Pierce.
Yeah. But did you play in game two against Roberts?
Yes.
That was the game that it was 2-1 in 10 innings?
Yes.
And DiMaggio popped up four times to the infield and then hit a home run.
I hit a ball to left center off Robin in the seventh inning, and I regret to this day I didn't try for two. I regret to this day. Each day I almost think about that. That I knew it would have been a very close play at second base, but I think I probably could have made it. And I decided that since I wasn't quite sure, I better stay on first, because I thought with being on first with no outs, we had a chance to score the run. But this day, I regret not going to second base.
So how often do you think about that?
At least four times a week. At least four times a week, I think about not going to second base. And I guess that's why I was an internist and not a surgeon. I thought too much about it going down to first base. I should have gone all out.
That was to left field?
It was to left center, and Richie Ashford made a great play. But and actually, if you look at the tapes, he made a good throw to second base. But his arm was an average arm, and I should have gone. And I regret it to this day. I made a terrific turn and threw on the brakes, and I was mad at the time and still mad.
Still mad.
It's only 50 years ago.
But and all he did was sweep the series. But one question I'm interested in, you'd played the Dodgers before, and they were sort of the powerhouse. Were you at all overconfident coming against the Phillies? Because weren't the team the Dodgers were. You must have known that.
But anytime you're in the World Series, you're against a good team. But I think that the Yankees always felt we could beat the other team, no matter who we were playing, whether it was in the regular season or the World Series. I mean, you just felt that you could beat the other team. And it wasn't that was as far as being disrespectful. You knew that they had a darn good team. Anytime you have a team in the World Series, you know they're a very, very good team. But we thought we could, every team we faced, we thought we could beat in the series.
So then, now you after that series, you graduated. Did you start your internship?
Started my internship the 15th of October, 1950. I got the series ended in, I forget, after the first week in October, probably the 6th or 7th, and so I drove across the country in my car to San Francisco and started my internship.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, and that was in San Francisco?
Yes.
Now, is that when you got married?
No, I got married the next year.
Okay.
In 1950, I was still single.
Okay. And so then... Did you work it out with the internship so that you could go to spring training, or did you end up having to be late there too?
I had to do a full year's internship, but I got 2 weeks vacation.
Okay.
But I started on the 15th of October, but I think I went until almost the 15th of April, because I had to do 12 months.